Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about scientific understanding of space, which is sort of a little bit different from the understanding you get from the blackboard, from school, and from naive imagination, because you sort of get a general space from being in, idea of your space being in your bedroom, and then your backyard, and then eventually you get up on an aircraft, and you think, oh, there's going to be a continuity of experiences going forward. So I'm just going to give a little bit of background. I'm doing a podcast while walking in the beautiful Australian sun up to a friend's place. G'day. And I did a podcast on, I think, special relativity recently. I just listened to it. The sound quality is not all that good. And so this is with a directional microphone while I'm walking. Hopefully the sound quality is a little bit better. There's this sort of imagination of, we're in a space that we can't travel faster than the speed of light, and therefore we've got all these things that, this magic which appears to happen within our concept of Euclidean space. So special relativity is sort of like an exception, sort of a magical, you wouldn't believe this happens, you wouldn't believe that happens, because we actually have got our framework, we have our frame of reference is Euclidean space, that is simple, if you go Euclidean, 1 plus 1 equals 2, plus 1 equals 3, plus 1 gets up, plus, if you do that 300 million times, you get up to the speed of light, plus 1 you get faster than the speed of light. There's nothing really to stop you. And it is true that everyone's method of thinking, every person's frame of thinking does work with a Euclidean frame of reference, but you're looking forward, you've got two different people, you get a sort of a contradiction happening here. You've got eventually Euclidean coordinates, or coordinates gives you a system where you can, I suppose, travel back in time. Not everything causes everything. This is a causality, that everything has a sort of defined cause, a history line going through it. Once you do play with that simple geometry, it doesn't work through. So this general idea that whatever you're thinking, there's this impression, and I think it's a great impression, of magic, that special relativity is somehow magical. You can slow something, clocks down, things can look smaller, and this is sort of head-scratching. It's still presented very much as magic. And it is only magic if you grow up in one system and you see something from another. It's, you know, how does that happen? A rabbit out of a hat, or a card trick. It's in terms of that there's a geometry system which you don't understand, it's going forward. And part of that is people's, poor education. Hopefully there won't be too much traffic noise here. And this feeling of when I draw space up on the blackboard, how is that different from space? In deep space, that is, if I draw a cube with nothing in it, how is that different from a cube of space with no particles in it, way out into the deep galaxy distance, say several galaxies away from our main group, a billion light years away? There is surely a section of space where there's really nothing there. How is that different? And the answer is, it is different, because void that you draw on a blackboard, you can arbitrarily specify the its response to electric field is nothing, its response to magnetic field is nothing, and light arrives at the corner and nothing happens. It doesn't transmit light. So the main difference between a conceptual void, which we is very easy because there's nothing much to say about it, and a space void is that a space, an area of space, can have a light beam travel across it. And so this is a bit complex, and having a light beam travel across it means that it's connected to all the other bits of space. It's part of basically a light waveguide, and it's pretty interesting that light from the Big Bang travels to us with no time passing. So one of the things that a void can have, so a area of space has, which space-time doesn't have, and that is the passage of time and the passage of light. And passage of light and of time is pretty much the same thing. So you've got the pervisity, I can't pronounce it, there's E and mu, and depending on what units you use, they're Gaussian units, I suppose. They're have certain things, certain properties of it. And the thing is that space, that void of space, basically obeys Maxwell's equations. So as opposed to another void of space in which I can specify other parameters, that void of space, which is all that is produced within the universe, obeys that. Now, that actual space itself can therefore, if you're ever close enough, it never looks contracted, but it actually looks as though it's contracted. And so this space has a whole heap of properties of it. And besides that, it's actually getting a little bit bigger with time. So it started off really small, and over the last 13.68 billion years, it's expanded to be 94 billion light years across. So it's actually expanded just an incredible amount. I'll be back with you in a tick. So in this age of searching for meaning, people often actually find meaning of things after that. But shocked and dismayed that their starting point is not a correct starting point. So a lot of people want to start with, and it's very philosophically ingrained, you have nothing or something. Nothing or something is, I'm just trying to think, monadism. Some of the very earliest philosophies have done that. But, which is really rather interesting. So Pythagoras put a dot in the sand and a circle around it, and that became the monad basics of philosophy, of there's something and not something. And so we have the ability in as humans to create something which doesn't exist, and the thing which doesn't exist is absolute nothingness. There is no box of absolute nothingness where all the parameters are set to zero and it's not pervaded by various fields or banes. I don't know whether banes are still in at the moment, but everything in the universe is permeated by, I suppose, an electric field, electric bane, and electromagnetic bane, which means that it is actually a medium, basically an ether. And then you also have a thing known as the Higgs field, and where your Higgs particles can rotate, and this means that can travel basically as a superconductor in space. So Basically, if you've got a box of nothing, really nothing can, you're philosophically sort of grounded of nothing actually being able to happen. It's hard, a bit hard to describe. So, in your Higgs space, Higgs field. So that means that if I were to put a pinprick at any point in the universe, in any space, there would be a Higgs particle there. So a Higgs particle field, and that Higgs particle is at zero energy. But its zero energy is not zero Higgs. And so if you actually make more space, you make more Higgs particles. The Higgs particles can have any phase or can rotate with any phase. And you can sort of, I can sort of imagine it, but I haven't fully grasped the maths of it, that as you project a particle through a Higgs space, a Higgs vector field, a Higgs scalar field, it will, you'll get a phase, and things will mass will transfer to that. I think it's called a hypercharge. I've got to really, really look into it, but there's an awful lot going on, and so where we have used maths to actually, we're now using maths to actually explain. Previously, people have used a combination of thought and observation. So, basically, they have not understood how the universe operates, and therefore they have said, "Well, I observe this to be universal truth," developed a system of understanding based on lack of understanding, if that makes sense. So if you go back to Newton, he said his three laws, it wasn't God said there, it was this. Newton had in his writing Principalia. Principalia is just the worst. It would fail a university degree, I would think, in terms of the way that it went through. It's very interesting, entertaining, but it's fairly early science. But he said these three principles, Newton's law, that something in motion will stay in motion unless a force is acting on it. A force will create an acceleration, and I suppose momentum is neither created or destroyed. so the very much idea of Newton is Newton's laws are basically descriptive and bring into the out of the medieval myths of medieval into the mathematical page the medieval idea of mass, which was developed by Giles of Rome to try and make a reconciliation between how there could be a commonality of creation, yet two things at the same time. It's hard to sort of describe it. He wanted to describe how Aristotle... Yeah, so it's basically Aristotle was version one, and he said, well, obviously the moon keeps on flying around and around, therefore it's not governed by the same laws of mass on Earth. So I have two realms, and to connect the two realms, Giles of Rome introduced the idea of mass. And then Newton said, I don't quite understand this, but this is a useful concept. So basically we sort of dreamed our way into, and we are still teaching a dream. And there's sort of glitches in the matrix in terms of, and we sort of teach science as a resolution of these glitches. So just following the Newtonian description and the medieval description, you get these mathematical contradictions as you go further forward, or using the principle that, oh, this is a fantastic old car here. It's an old, a vintage car, as I'm walking up to my mate's place just to check it's all okay. And a sort of very famous old house here. Okay, so you've got this fuddy, sort of non-mathematical way of thinking. It had clearly its flaws, and then we've had an upgrade, and the upgrade is also a fuddy-duddy way of thinking, and the attitude to special relativity in Einstein is still from the fuddy-duddy perspective. And this is that when you look at it deep down, there's these philosophical beliefs of God and the universe and our understanding, and people haven't actually said, oh, hang on, I'm actually allowed to think outside the universe. I can think of situations which don't exist. And never have they thought that I can actually think of a few things which don't exist. Sure, they do. And then start to tweak adjustments around the outside. So I can get a consistent system. But it's going to fall apart at certain points, and so we're still in the age of Einstein, working about things not working or falling apart. This is really interesting. They're looking at around the back of these, it's like a housing development. They've laid a road where there used to be a general sleeping lane. G'day, mate.
How you going, buddy?
Okay. Just having a chat to the builder. They're doing quite an amazing job. Quite an amazing job putting up stuff. It's pretty amazing to see this all comes up. It's interesting that it's interesting here that they're doing it in terms of housing what we have sort of done in physics. That is, build physics to look like the physics before. So I'm going to get up to my mate house and probably do another podcast with him after this. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.